Chapter 7. It's impossible. The only limit you have is your own imagination. You've probably heard that before, and you've probably ignored the power of it too, as the last thing your ego wants is you knowing this is true, let alone living it as a way of life. I'm going to share a few stories over the next couple of chapters, including one impossible story about health and the limitless power I and you have to do the impossible. And in later chapters, I'll show you some more impossible things happening too. As I share these stories, they may seem a bit fantastic or impossible to achieve. They're not. They just look it. The law of attraction is like any tool, and the better you get at using it, the more and more impossible work you can do. Over countless tiny manifestations, like computers as a kid and parking spaces as an adult, I gradually got better and better at using the law of attraction. You have an advantage over me. It took me years to realize what I was doing was happening because I thought it would. I wasted years of not knowing this stuff was happening on purpose. Knowing what I know now, I could have created so much more. But when I figured it out, I sat down and really dared to dream big. You may or may not wish to do that yet, as your ego will want to knock you down if you dream too big before you can control it. Or you may just decide, stuff it, I'm doing it. Everything is your choice. As you read the stories, I suggest you attempt to consider the mindset I had along the way. See what you think was going on in my mind to achieve the results, and then see how you had the same mindset too about when you were succeeding at things. Don't be intimidated by the size of the manifestation, as the scale is only there to inspire. Success on any level is achieved through the same mindset process, because it's a universal law and can be replicated. Okay, first off, we need to deal with you seeing things as possible as opposed to impossible, because whatever you think is possible or impossible will end up being your reality. So we have to make you seeing anything you want as possible without any positive thinking, and definitely without hoping it'll happen or relying on luck for it to happen. Napoleon Hill said, "Desire is the starting point of all achievement. Not a hope, not a wish, but a keen pulsating desire which transcends everything." We are taught by experts to dream big, that this is the answer. Well, yes, it is. But that's what to think again, not how to think. So here's how to dream big. But first, you need to understand what goes on when virtually all people attempt to dream up something big. For this example, I'll use Richard Branson to make the point. But this can be anything you once dreamed or rather started to dream big on. Let's say someone gets inspired by what Richard Branson has achieved. They start to consider that they too can build a big business. They sit back and enjoy the feeling of what it would be like to do it. They start to consider how they would build it, how they would get there. They begin to fill in the blanks. They begin to consider how it could be possible in a good way. But now their ego begins to throw things in like, this is too hard, and you've never done this before, or you're not as clever as Richard Branson. Small, tiny, irrelevant doubts are thrown into the dream pot and mixed around. Soon enough, the dream begins to be killed by these doubts, and instead, now it's time to build something realistic instead. Like a small business, maybe, and only maybe. Because you don't want to risk what you've got. And so, the fear of failure card is played by the ego. Now, if the dream wasn't nearly dead already, then it is by now. The chance of the person being another Richard Branson or doing something greater is disappearing fast. And the likelihood of despondency and regret in life is moving into yet another person who just dared to dream big for a few short seconds. The experts, of course, will tell you how to handle the fear of failure with more what to think information. Feel the fear and do it anyway. Everything you want is on the other side of fear. These quotes and thousands more just like them are supposed to inspire a person through their fear of failure. And they work for 1 in 100 people who succeed. But those people would have found a way through anyway without the inspiring quotes. The 1 in 100 didn't need their help. So all that wonderful what to think information isn't helping solve the problem for the 99 in 100. They need how to think information. They need something that helps them solve the problem. Not something that makes them feel bad for not being able to feel the fear and do it anyway. The problem is, because there is no structured thinking for someone dreaming big, then when they attempt it, the ego can easily prevent it and stop their progress. When manifesting and you're at the creating part of the dream, you can only look at the how to get there if you are just daring to dream without limitation. You can only do this safely if you can silence your ego. When I dream big, I sit there and just consider possible ways it could happen. Not that it will happen, just that it could. For example, when I conceived my bug-free mind structured thinking process after I found the missing piece in the personal development work, I sat there and thought, How can I write the most effective work on personal development there's ever been? I think it's fair to say that was a big dream, as there's a lot of great work out there. And I thought, well, if I want to have the life I've just designed for myself, then that's what I must do to achieve it. So I said to myself in a very matter-of-fact way, let's get on with it then. And I began to write. I expected to solve the problem along the way. And because I thought I would, I could and did. If I had doubted I could because it was too hard or I'd never done it before, and there were far more clever authors out there than me who hadn't just failed so spectacularly, so who the heck did I think I was, then I wouldn't have achieved it. But I didn't. I dreamed big and saw what my life would be like having achieved it. I saw the benefit to everyone else too. And I sort of instantly became responsible for creating it, as many were looking and I knew I could help. Then I just considered ways it could be possible in a very calm and relaxed way without any judgment. I simply decided that if I wanted to actually have happen in real life the dream I had just had happen in my mind, then I would simply need to write the most effective work ever at getting people results. Now, because my ego was not allowed to throw rocks at me, because I am the controller of my thoughts, I was free to dare to dream big. And when my ego eventually managed to chuck the odd rock or two at me, I saw them as not helping to bring my reality into everyone else's. So the rocks it threw dissolved into nothing before they could damage my dream. You cannot work on how unless you're the controller of your thoughts. Or else, any big dreams you create, your ego will destroy with its doubts. So the secret is to not look for the how it must happen. Just look at how it could happen. Just come up with ideas and show your mind how it's possible. Exactly how isn't your job. That's the work of your subconscious mind. Your job is to show your subconscious mind what you desire. I showed mine my future life of success. I had just failed spectacularly and very publicly. Now, the future I wanted was total vindication by teaching people how they could succeed at anything. Incidentally, I read in 2012 that Napoleon Hill, the author of probably the best known book on success, Think and Grow Rich, actually begun writing his work on teaching success right after he failed too. This made me feel quite good. I digress. So in the process of creating the dream, you just look at how it could happen and show your subconscious mind possible ways to get there. You keep filling your mind with the data until you reach the point where you feel it is real. No positive thinking. Instead, you feel that this is real and is without a doubt going to happen in your future. At this point, you can be excited and love it as you have passed the barrier of knowing it. It's real and you have uploaded your instruction 100%. From there, you are now looking for ways to bring this into your and everyone else's physical reality, as to not do so would feel wrong. Your ego's attempts to destroy your big dream are seen as unhelpful, so you don't fight your ego. You see it as more of an uneducated annoyance, and so without effort, dismiss its attempts to keep you down. Your work is learning how to ask for something in the right way so your subconscious mind gets it. This is where you focus your energy in manifesting. Remember, your subconscious mind does not think in words, it thinks in feelings and in pictures. You show it yourself in the future and you show it possible ways to get there in feelings and pictures, and it will find the exact route how for you. For example, one of the routes to getting my bug-free mind work well known was, or is, doing a PR book tour in America. I know a lot of best-selling authors as friends, and a lot of them had done the TV and radio talk show tour in the States. So I saw this as one potential way. In early 2012, I began working again with an old business partner of mine when I asked him to come and work with me at Changing the World with my bug-free mind work. We sat and discussed the next few years, and at the time I said to him that early next year, 2013, we would probably need to find an expert to help us do a talk show tour in the States. That's all I said. I put no more effort in than that, but previously I'd considered this a potential route for me to take and saw how it was one of many possible routes. Early January 2013, I'm in Miami, Florida, and about to get on a Caribbean cruise. At a networking event before the cruise, I meet two experts at helping authors get on these tours. Then while on the cruise, another expert on exactly the same thing approaches me. Then over the next 2 months, three more different people, all in exactly the same field, approach us. By this time, I decided I didn't want to take this route, but I still had more people coming to me. In the end, there were eight different contacts, all of which, who were experts in that field, came to me. I didn't go to them. Now, I hadn't even noticed that these guys had come to me through manifesting. My friend Pete said, "You brought all these people to us by saying you wanted this to happen." I had since changed my mind, but my subconscious mind had done its job and gone to the universe and connected with all these different people and engineered coincidences that meant they contacted us. Right now you're probably thinking, sure, I'm a mark to them. That's how they make their money, right? Well, this manifestation isn't going to let you off that easy. 5 out of these 8 had read my Bug Free Mind process and felt they had to help me share it with people. They came to us through the law of attraction. The other 3 I met on the cruise and just liked us. Pete said to me that these people wouldn't leave him alone and wanted to introduce me for free to people. And I kept saying no. It got so bad that he said his time was being taken up by attempting to explain why I didn't want this to happen. So much so that could I stop manifesting it? So I consciously had to tell my subconscious mind to distract them. So Pete stopped getting the calls. Now they just email him occasionally asking if I'm ready yet. Consider this for a second. I know I can ask to have anyone I want come into my life to help me. My uncle told me this would happen and I lived to it. I just haven't wanted to see many people yet. Though when I wanted to meet Steve Wozniak, the speed at which that happened was very cool. When you stop your ego throwing rocks at your dreams by not allowing them to affect your dreams, then you are free to dream big. You're free to consider how things could happen without the burden of your ego wanting you to prove how that route can be realistic. Instead, you're free to dream. So, it is the removal of doubt which is the secret. It is not to think positively. I do not think positively, I just do not think negatively. Then all that remains is positive. This is far easier to achieve than to always think positively. Do you see how the impossible is possible yet? Well, I'm guessing right now you can see how it's possible for me. And you probably know for a fact that you've found someone who can walk the talk. But you're probably still doubting your own ability, given the fact that all the previous examples that have happened in your life. That's okay. We are still only partway through this. There's a lot more mindset shifts still to come. And I want to show you some really impossible stuff too. But for a second, consider this. When you become a master of the law of attraction, you actually have to become wary of what you are creating with your dreams, as you create so easily that you can have anything. Consider for a second, if you'd like to, what a wonderful problem that would be to have. Becoming aware. One thing you must do to master the law of attraction is to become aware. I'm going to share with you a few more stories and show you how you must learn to pay attention to what's being presented to you. Yes, it really can have been you that created it. Remember to consider my state of mind as we go through. Pause at any time to consider. The first story is when I created my perfect partner and brought her into my life. Before I start, I should say we're not able to affect others with the law of attraction unless they are looking for what you want to. The story happened in 1988 when I was 21 years old. I had recently split up with a girlfriend and I was considering finding the perfect person for me. Then I suddenly thought, so we're just supposed to bump into the person we're going to spend the rest of our lives with, are we? Who came up with this plan? This is a dumb plan. I sat there and realised the world was following a dumb plan and that this was probably why there were so few happy people about. So I considered what other ways there were to find a person. This was years before the internet dating sites or the internet. I realised that I didn't actually know what I wanted in a person. I had a vague wishy-washy idea of a beautiful girl, but nothing much more than that. So I picked up a piece of paper and proceeded to design my perfect partner. I decided she had to live within a 10-mile radius of me, that she had to live or work within 100 yards of where I travelled. I put together every detail of what she looked like. I listed out exactly what she liked to do in life and how I was going to be the perfect centre of attention for her. I looked at our future together and saw how I never wanted her thinking of divorce, so her parents needed to be happily married so that she expected that outcome for herself too. I wanted her to have an older brother or sister. I even designed that her parents would want to babysit for us. I also designed the fact that she'd love me too, including all my faults. I went on and on designing my perfect partner. I added in every tiny detail I could think about. While I was doing this, I began to see this girl in my mind, and I had this feeling that she was real, and that she, in fact, was looking for me too. I felt that when she saw me, she would fall in love with me instantly. This girl felt so real to me that I felt I should give her a name. It didn't need to be her name, just my favourite girl's name, which, of course, was Alison, as my favourite cousin was Alison. Now, she felt so real that I felt she was looking for me too. After a few hours of feeling pretty wonderful, I stopped designing her. What I didn't know at the time, as this was the first time I'd really done it, was that I'd uploaded my design 100%. It was done. I had placed my order to the universe and shown my subconscious mind exactly what it had to go and get for me. So I just went about my day, knowing that I would be finding the person soon. The next morning, I drove to work and noticed in a shop I drove past a very pretty girl. This was the first girl I'd seen since designing my perfect partner. I thought, she's pretty, I'll have to stop there sometime. Then I thought, I wonder if she's the one, to which my ego quickly replied, don't be daft, you only designed this yesterday. So I doubted it and went on with my life. A couple of weeks later, I slowed down enough to remember to go into the shop. By now, I'd found a couple of potential perfect partners, but when I saw her, I had the feeling I was supposed to know her. Sure enough, after considering her for a while, I decided it was her, and that I needed to sweep her off her feet. Now, I was the eldest of two brothers. Talking to girls did not come easily to me. So I needed to find a way where actions could speak, or I'd fumble my words, as I instinctively knew I wanted it too much. The relationship, not sex, though that definitely came up too. So whilst driving to work, I considered how a chance meeting could occur. Not would occur, could occur. On the following Sunday, I was playing cards with my brother, and he asked me how it was going on the girlfriend front. I said I found one I really liked and was just figuring out the best way to approach her. He asked me where she came from, and I told him she worked in a newsagent in Storrington. Not the one as you go into Storrington, he said. Yes, it is. He asked me if she had long brown hair. I said, yes. Her name's not Alison, is it? He asked. Now at the time, I'd forgotten I'd designed her name to be Alison. I only realised I'd done that when I found my design years later. I said, yes, that's her name. At which point my brother said, oh no, I don't believe it. How can this happen? It turned out he had already asked her out and she'd turned him down. Fortunately at the time, I was blessed with good looks, something that time has taken from me in the cruelest of possible ways. But back then, I was good looking. It turned out that this was the girl who'd given him a dodgy phone number to get rid of him. And then, not being put off, my brother had spent a day and a half driving around Storrington to find out where she lived. I said, you know where she lives. Give me her address. I knew she was going to be perfect for me, and so did my brother. He saw right then that his elder brother was going to be spending a lot of time with the girl who had not wanted to go out with him. He emigrated to Tasmania a few years later. I'm not saying it bothered him, but this was as far away as he could go. Only joking. So I drove round to her home the following Friday night, as I knew she fancied me, and stalking is allowed when you're young. I knocked on the door, spoke to her mum, and then she came to the door, and I could see she was blown away. We've been together ever since. Life just continues to get better with her. I love all the time we get to spend together, and the sex is great too. Fortunately, my subconscious mind showed her to me more than once. It was actually several times before I actually stopped. But if I hadn't become aware, then I may have missed her. The problem was, I allowed my ego to convince me to doubt that finding her, the one person in the world for me, could have happened in less than 24 hours, and in fact be the very first girl I saw after designing her. I doubted it. But think about it, why not? I'd created a near perfect design, she was perfect for me, and I was perfect for her, because I put me into the design for her too. In fact, the only fault she has is that she doesn't like, in fact she hates, personal development books. She thinks I'm a bit weird for writing them, and she thinks you're a bit weird for reading them. When I invite her to come and meet people when I teach occasionally, she says, I don't want to meet weirdos who are into that stuff. Then when she meets them, she says, they're really nice. Yeah, funny that. People who are into self-development being nice people. The problem is, I didn't know that personal development books existed when I designed her, so I didn't put that into her design. One reason I think it happened so fast was that she was looking for me too, and there was nothing left to be done. This was a near perfect manifestation. The funny thing was that after designing her, I never looked at the design again. I didn't do anything the expert tell you to do with goals where it comes to looking at the goal daily. I had uploaded my design 100%, and now it was time to work diligently on bringing my design into everyone else's reality, especially hers. I really never looked at the design again. In fact, it was only in 2005 or 2006 when I was listening to a Tony Robbins CD where he said, you should design your perfect partner, that I remembered I'd even done it nearly 2 decades before. I went home and told Alison the whole story as I'd never explained it before, to which she said how unromantic it was and wasn't happy with the fact that she was my goal. Until this year, she saw it as unromantic and then one day was working next to me. We work together at home. She runs our investments and I write and build the business. She was there, and I was checking the video footage from a life design getaway seminar I'd just done. I don't do many seminars, but I taught the design process I used to create her in 2014 and travelled around the world for 6 weeks teaching it. Actually, that 6 week world tour being paid to speak was another thing I manifested too. In 2010, I sat down and figured out all the things I wanted to do, and one was travel around the world being paid to speak and travel with my friend Pete. But I was open to an even greater manifestation, and in 2014, I got to tour the world being paid to speak and travel with two friends, Pete and Tim. I digress again. One of the ideas of the world tour was by the time I got back to England, I'd be good enough at it to be filmed and I could create it into a short video course, rather than doing these one-day seminars again. I did this live because the design process is not something that translates well into written or audio. It needs to be taught live or on video, as we do a lot of direct communication with your subconscious mind, and that can be almost impossible without body language to help get the message across. Anyway, she was listening and watching at times the footage of the seminar, and she's still never seen me speak. I obviously told the story of designing her my perfect partner. I didn't think she was listening, but after it finished, she said, "I'm glad I didn't come and see you," as I'd have burst into tears. She had finally seen it in the romantic way it was meant. So is less than 24 hours impossible? Obviously not. Improbable, certainly, but not impossible. So don't doubt your ability to do the impossible, as in doing so, you're killing the possibility of it. But why not? She wanted me, so why couldn't it happen within 24 hours? Now making millions took a little longer. And depending on how you're going to do it, it can take a while, or a long while. As long as you don't doubt the impossible, you have a good chance. All you're doing is allowing the improbable the possibility of happening. After all, if you drop a coin on the ground enough times, eventually it'll end up on its side. But it's highly improbable. Your job as a master of the law of attraction is to just not get in the way of it happening. You have to work diligently on providing a set of circumstances that enables the improbable to have more of a chance. And the easiest way to do this is to first get out of your own way by not doubting it. Now, if you think using the law of attraction to find your perfect partner who has your favourite girl's name is impossible, then how about this? When I was crippled. All areas of life can be resolved using the law of attraction, if you think they can. Back in 2003, I was crippled with a disc in my back being twisted slightly and putting pressure on my sciatic nerve. It felt like someone had stuck a dagger into the nerve at the centre of my leg and was wiggling it about. The pain would start in my leg and just destroy my ability to do anything, and I spent months in agony. The problem was, I needed to be fixed so that I was not either crippled or in agony for the rest of my life. I decided to try everything. However, I knew this would be fixed. I never doubted that, as I saw me living my life without the pain. The only caveat I had was to not have an operation. I did not want my spine hacked about with. I had suffered with a bad back for years and was used to spending 5 to 10 days a year crippled. Up until this point, I considered that an acceptable trade for the damage I had undoubtedly done to my back through years of abuse on site. Though I did dream about never having a bad back again, whilst my ego did what it could to tell me how that was impossible. But thanks to the excruciating sciatic pain, I decided that I'd had enough of all this. And I wanted rid of bad back pain and sciatic pain for good. I reached an absolute decision. I would be rid of this pain for good. It wasn't a request, it was an instruction. As I also dreamed about how wonderful my life would be when I was no longer in this pain. And that was what I had to bring into my reality. So my goal was my back being fixed permanently and no operation in the process. Totally unrealistic, I know. But I also knew this would happen as it felt right. I then set out to try absolutely every possible cure, providing multiple solutions. I was working diligently on creating the probability of a cure. I would try different practitioners as well and multiple sessions. I would not assume that because one person was an expert in, say, acupuncture, that all acupuncturists were the same. You name it, I tried it, and I tried it more than once. But after a couple of months, I was losing the will to live. I had tried stacks and nothing had made even the slightest difference. You know the feeling you get when something feels different, a little better, and you know it. Well, I didn't have even the smallest feeling of that after every conceivable treatment. I felt totally trapped. So in the end, I relented and went to see the doctor. I knew what they'd say. You need an operation. She had the best intentions, of course, and told me how she'd have me fixed up in no time with an operation. There was nothing to worry about, as her husband had had the same thing. A quick op and it was all fixed. The next day I went and saw a specialist. Had an MRI scan done, and he said almost the same thing. Everything in my body said, yes, this would fix it now, but would not fix it forever. I also knew once this was done, it couldn't be undone. And I knew I was at the crossroads, which would either free me from pain for good or end up with a quick fix now and then pain for the rest of my life, which would begin at some point in the future. This wasn't the solution I was looking for. Don't get me wrong, this was not an expert's opinion. These were my instincts about what was logical. At the crossroads where the route freedom from pain for good was marked, the road looked like it had no end in sight, no promise of hope, no idea where it would lead. This was definitely the long, painful route. The other direction had a warm hospital with friendly people offering an immediate fix. I relented and agreed to the operation. It was booked for 3 weeks' time. Although despite the constant pain and the fact that I hadn't slept on a bed for months or had more than an hour's sleep without waking in pain, I decided that I would continue to seek an alternative solution right up until the operation. A couple of weekends before the operation, I was at a wedding and had to have a chair with me all the time. I was dosed up on my usual 30 plus painkillers a day. I of course mixed that with as much alcohol as I could, as the pain was bad. Then a friend I hadn't seen for several years said he was doing some work for a guy who was having him do some plumbing work in his new restaurant. He told me this guy reckoned he could cure any bad back with a wooden stick. By this time I'd actually given up and paid lip service to my friend's suggestion. I said I would call the guy with the wooden stick on Monday, but had no intention of doing so. After all, this guy was a chef, not a back specialist. Then on my way back from the hotel room at the wedding, I bumped into my friend again in the corridor, and he happened to be on the phone to the chef. I was drunk by this time and still in agony, but he put me on the phone and I thought, why not? I said I'd call him Monday to set up an appointment. I called him and set up the time for Wednesday. I was in such a bad way that I had to ask my friend Pete, yes, the same Pete, to drive me, as I could no longer drive. I had stacks of Ferraris and Lamborghinis, but could no longer drive. That was surreal in itself. Now, everything about this was wrong. He was a chef, not a bad back specialist. He didn't have a treatment table, he had a coffee table. He didn't have a surgery, he had a one-bedroom flat with a front room. He didn't have a certificate on his mantelpiece. He had models of Chinese weapons. He didn't have a receptionist. He had a mate watching children's TV in the middle of the day. This was also very, very wrong. Yet somehow, I knew he would fix it. His professional diagnosis took about 30 seconds with me standing there in front of him in his front room with his mate watching children's TV and now me dressed only in my boxer shorts. Oh, and did I mention that Brighton is the gay capital of the UK and where he lived was the height of the gay district? Also, that I had zero ability to fend off any unwanted advances. Talk about hitting a low point. Anyway, his highly professional 30-second diagnosis, which was said in a very strong Chinese accent, was, "Oh, you're back, you're fucked!" Which inspired confidence no end. Nevertheless, he told me he could only cure it 99%, and it would take weekly treatments over 18 months. I was not really paying that much attention to the 18 months, but I had heard the 99% fix very clearly, and I heard the truth in what he was saying. This wasn't just some chef who could massage backs too. I knew this guy was something special. I had a treatment, which was not pain-free. In fact, it was excruciatingly painful. And I screamed so much that even his friend got off the sofa and went and watched children's TV in the bedroom. My torturer said to me that I have to give up all painkillers, to which I told him they were keeping me alive. He told me to come back next Wednesday for another treatment. I had zero intention of ever letting him anywhere near my back again. But when I got off the coffee table and stood up, something was different. As Bill Murray said in Groundhog Day, anything different is good. I walked outside and the pain was, well, less. I went home and cancelled the operation. The following week, I went back for the treatment and was down to one painkiller a day. The following week, I was down to none and have never taken a painkiller since for anything other than a hangover. Within a few weeks, I was back up to 80% fixed. And 18 months later, to the week, I was fixed. The rest is history. I don't have a bad back anymore. He cured that, just as he said he would. He also removed 99% of the arthritis I had in my hands from the years on the tools. I also never had the back operation, and he became a very good friend. He gave me my first real wellness experience, and he changed my life. I no longer suffer with a bad back, ever. However, if I do something to make me have a bad back, like sitting typing non-stop for 3 weeks, I know whatever damage I've done can be undone simply. So what the heck happened? This guy wasn't a back specialist before I met him. I mean, he was. But he was a chef and wasn't practicing his treatments. In my first book on making money, I told the same story. And then he gave up being a chef because he treated so many of my book buyers and cured all sorts of ailments for them. But just imagine the power of my goal setting to manifest what I did. I knew it would work. In fact, the only point I actually gave up on knowing it was during the conversation with my friend who was telling me about him. I almost missed becoming aware. But my subconscious mind was there to help with me bumping into my friend in the corridor when he was on the phone to him. Impossible, right? So what happened? Simple. I had created this. He was the only person doing the treatment in the UK. I've never heard about it before. When I Googled it, neither had they. There were zero results on Google. Until April 2014, I had never heard of anyone else in the world doing it. Then when I was on the world tour teaching the Life Design Technique, I told this story and a lady told me that she had the treatment done by a man in Egypt and how it had fixed her too and how she'd asked for a cure and found him. But until I told my story, she hadn't realised she'd manifested the same cure too. But apart from the guy in Egypt, as far as I've been able to find out, he's the only person in the world doing it. I asked him once how old the treatment was, and he said he didn't know. He had been crippled himself and was carried by his friends into an old Chinese guy who took 18 months to fix him. He had then asked the old Chinese guy to teach him, and in return he would sweep up and work for the old guy. This was a dying Chinese art, and I had uncovered it to solve my bad back and sciatic pain. Just think about how improbable all of this is. I tried every alternative therapy you could name and some you couldn't. I tried multiple therapists to make sure that it wasn't that they were no good at it. Finally, I gave in and tried conventional medicine. I was certain there was another way, but the pain was simply impossible to bear. Then this guy lived within 20 miles of me, and he wasn't in the business. He was a chef and had moved to the UK a few years before and never treated anyone in the UK. I was the first one. Most people didn't have to endure the pain I did, as he was very rusty when he first worked on me. But what are the odds against this? Think about what life-giving power I had just discovered. I could cure the incurable just by knowing I could. This taught me the power of manifestation. I made a decision and I knew that despite what every expert said, I would make it happen. My back was fixed for good with no operation. How cool is that? So is it impossible to find a cure when it's not possible? The answer is, it depends on one thing. If you think you can find the impossible, then it's possible. If you think you cannot find it, then it really is impossible. You can shape your health with your mind. I live this as a way of life. I've since cured all things as they come up, and this wellness experience inspired me to learn more and more about health. I could write at least one book on what I discovered and have cured in myself and others. But we already know we can fix things with our minds. Doctors have known this for centuries. A doctor will often give their patient a placebo medication, as they know that if they think they are being given a cure, they will just get better. So why do we always think we need medication when we already know that our minds are capable of curing us? At least some of the time. And in my experience, all of the time. Well, we only know it on an intellectual level. We don't know it on a way of life level. So we don't know it, do we? Some more proof that this impossible stuff is true comes from the wonderful Dr. Emile Cooley. Emile Cooley was a French psychologist and pharmacist who introduced a popular method of psychotherapy and self-improvement based on optimistic autosuggestion. The application of his mantra-like conscious autosuggestion, every day in every way I'm getting better and better, or day by day in every way I'm getting better and better. The Cooley method centered on a routine repetition of this particular expression according to a specified ritual, preferably as much as 20 times a day and especially at the beginning and the end of the day. Cooley maintained that curing some of our troubles requires a change in our unconscious thought, which can be achieved only by using our imagination, though stressing that he was not primarily a healer, but one who taught others how to heal themselves. Cooley effected organic changes through autosuggestion. he observed that the main obstacle to autosuggestion was willpower. For the method to work, the patient must refrain from making any independent judgment, meaning that he must not let his will impose its own views on positive ideas. Everything must thus be done to ensure that the positive autosuggestive idea is consciously accepted by the patient, otherwise the patient may end up getting the opposite effect of what's desired. For example, when a student has forgotten an answer to a question in an exam, he will likely think something such as, "I've forgotten the answer." The more he or she tries to think of it, the more the answer becomes blurred and obscured. However, if this negative thought is replaced with a more positive one, no need to worry, it'll come back to me. The chances that the student will come to remember the answer will increase. Cooley was given the opportunity to work with countless terminally ill patients who were often sent to him when they were expected to live for only a couple more weeks. What happened next was impossible, and is still considered impossible, but something in the region of 90% of the terminally ill patients just didn't die. They got better and left. Cooley had come up with a way to fix all kinds of diseases, even terminally ill ones, using the law of attraction. So just imagine for a second, you were me, and you were living a way of life where you knew you could fix anything that came up. How relaxed and comfortable would you be? You can master the law of attraction to do the impossible for you too, if you don't doubt it and just think you can. Your immune system will heal itself. Parts of our bodies are replaced every day, every week, every month, every year. Within a few years, we have a brand new body. So all you have to do is not get in your own way by doubting it. My mum believed in her doctor so much that last year it nearly killed her. I offered to help her with a real cure as I knew the medication was her problem. But she knew the medication was her cure. She steadily got worse and worse. Alison said to me, "Can I help her?" And I said, "She has to be ready. She's got to be desperate enough for me to help her." One day she showed up at our home and I actually saw that she had less than a year to live. She looked very ill and was depressed and broken. I asked her, "Are you ready to be cured of this yet, Mum?" To which she replied, "Of course I am." I told her that it would mean questioning what she knew was true. She said she'd do anything, as she'd lost 42 pounds in 3 months and was sick daily and had near constant diarrhea. So I told her to get a medicine. I went on to Google and typed the name of the medicine plus side effects. The first article came up from the National Health Service. The first line said, "If you're suffering from sickness or diarrhea, then stop taking this immediately." I turned to my mum and said, "Can't your doctor use Google? Or maybe he can't type a question in." Instantly, I broke the bond my mum had had with her doctor and she saw how she could be healed. I think it was 5 or 6 of her medications that all said stop taking immediately if you had those symptoms. The other 3 or 4 were giving her something that she lacked in her diet. So I designed a new diet for her and showed her how the minerals she needed that were in the medications she could now get from food. We halved her remaining medication to wean her off them slowly and she began her new lifestyle. 2 days later, she was well enough to see friends again. 2 weeks later, she was well and has remained so. I told her not to tell her doctor. But she did, and he was so grateful she was well, as he'd been trying everything he could to help her. But the key point, which I haven't shared with my mum, is that she now thinks she can control her health. She now thinks she can fix herself, so she does. Occasionally, she shows up and says she's ill again, and I ask her what medication he's put her back on. She tells me, and I go online and show her that the medication is causing her side effect, or I show her how to remove it with food. It can be tricky to make new tricks stick when teaching an old... I'll leave that analogy. As you age, it becomes harder and harder to alter the neurons in your mind because they are deeply ingrained. So sometimes we will revert back to the old ways even after we have proved to ourselves that a new way works and the old way doesn't. So an awareness of that will help if you can make it part of your life. If you cannot, it will probably be destructive. W. Clement Stone said, "Whatever the mind of a man can conceive, it can achieve. My mum can now conceive health. I can now conceive that I can create the impossible. You are only limited by what you can conceive." I like to set a goal so big that if I achieve it, it will blow my mind. But each time I do that, I see how it's actually likely to happen now that I've considered it as a possibility. Then you get into the world of thinking, if I can have anything, then exactly what do I want? As I must be careful. How do you feel about achieving the impossible now? Remember, I am showing you big manifestations. to demonstrate what's possible. Do not let the scale intimidate, as the process for manifesting big and small is the same. Before leaving this, I would like to tell you, if you let me, what big goal I set for myself and how I'm doing at creating it now. Bear in mind, I gave myself at least 20 hours thought regarding this goal, but then it's pretty big and audacious.